we're doing. This song would be some wild shit. Thank you. probably 20 years old.
Thank you. I know there's some Merle Haggard fans here in Southern California. He was my favorite of all time. He was always about as good as it gets. Wrote those songs and played and loved musicians and was a musician. And everything I ever wanted to be was like old Merle. And I wrote this song for him years ago. One of the reasons we don't have an opening act so I can play songs you've never heard before. I like to play, you know, and over all these years I've been doing this, you know, like I said, the first time I played here was a 19-year-old kid, and I just moved to town and came here and did a concert, and the band I was in was Academy Byron Berline, and we opened for Guy Clark that night. I met some of my heroes that first night I was here, Emmy Lou and Rodney Crowell, and it was a great night for me, Guy and everybody. But anyway, I love Hag, and this song I wrote for him, kind of loosely based on his life, and it's an obscure cut from a record years back. It's called A Real Mean Mom.
Oh,
Anybody here tonight with somebody you shouldn't be? I lived here. I know that's true.
Guilty.
I'm just saying. I'm only asking because I'm getting ready to sing a cheating song. I love cheating songs. They put make country music good. Now these kids sing no cheating songs anymore. Anyway, I think if you go to a country music show and they don't do you a cheating song, you ought to get some of your money back. It's as good a cheating song as I don't know how to sing or play right here. You boys ready? He slipped the ring on. very much. Well, I came out here in 1976 and 19-year-old kid, and I thought I could make it as a banjo player.
Yeah.
Play the banjo. Where in the house would you move? Where you work for Steve Martin, you know. I came out here as a kid, and I love bluegrass music a lot of the time. That's what I came out here to play a little bit of, and then I got out here and was immersed with the greatest musicians in the world. It was the greatest experience I'd ever known, and really invaluable coming out here for my life and my career. And anyway, this song is kind of bluegrassy in nature. We don't have a banjo anymore. I have the good taste to keep playing one. That never was very good. Song's called The High Lonesome Sound. Thank you. I spent a whole lot of my life singing songs nobody had ever heard. this next song is on my, not my most recent record, but my second to last record. New record just came out a couple weeks ago. But the record before that was a record called These Days. People told me after I'd done it that it was a box set of all new music, and each disc was different stylistically. One was a kind of a rockin' record with a lot of obnoxious guitar playing, and one was a real traditional country record, you know? And put that one on, you can smell the beer. One record was kind of bluegrassy and Americana, and one was a record hoping everybody would get lucky if they listened to it. A groovy, romantic record, you know? But this was one of my favorite songs on that last record. Somebody asked them the other day if they'd heard my last record, and they said, I sure hope so. Show biz BS, baby. But anyway, this is a sweet song I got to record with Emmy Lou. It's called Some Things Never Get Old. Yeah. Thank you, Brother Mark. You know what? This is fun. Really, you know, I didn't know what kind of emotions I was going to go through up here on this stage tonight. Like I said, it's been 35 years since I played in here, and it just dawned on me right during that last song. It don't matter. It's just fun to play music no matter where. It is. I'm about to sing a really nice love song. This was a love song that I wrote with a fellow named Max D. Barnes. Max was a really fine country music songwriter, one of the best ever. Max is no longer with us, but he wrote some of the best songs in history. He wrote, Who's Gonna Fill Their Shoes? Who's Gonna Stand Up? For George Jones, you remember that?
Yeah.
Then he wrote, You Don't Know About Lonely Till It's Chiseled in Stone. I thought it was one of the best songs I'd ever heard in my whole life. Anyway, I got to write this song with him. I'm sure glad I did, because I got to get a nice big Cadillac like Max had. After we did this. Hey, Benny, who was that fellow's name that wanted me to do something for him tonight? Eric? Aaron? Aaron. Aaron, where are you? Are you here? Aaron is here tonight, and we're old friends. We go back 35 years. Y'all just be still for a second. I think this fella has something really important he wants to ask that pretty girl with him. Your coverage. Well, we'll sing this song just for you. Maybe this will be your song.
Look at
Traveling songs. So we headed for Kentucky with a suitcase full of dreams, rough out boots, a few t-shirts, a worn out pair of jeans. just east of Little Reno, next to Ted's Escondido, set the old Rocky Diamond Motel. Little Steve and my dog sling the cheese in July. She's smoking down filtered bell bells. Old man shooting pool, bussing a light pools, the old Rocky Diamond Motel.
Another new song off of this record. I wrote wrote this song with a girl named Leslie Satcher, who's a great songwriter from Texas. And anyway, it, we started working on it. The first line, I said the first line of the song. I got a big lump in my throat. She said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Well, it kind of reminds me of my brother a little bit." I wrote a song for my brother when he passed away called "Go Rest High on That Mountain." Later, but, anyway, he had a pretty rough stretch of life. He had a car wreck when he was 21 or 22, just about to graduate college. And anyway, he was severely injured in a car wreck and was in a coma for many months and not expected to live and all that. And because of it, he kind of spent the rest of his life odd jobs and never could keep a job for very long just because of the wreck and whatnot. Didn't really quite have all of his capacities together and wound up kind of hoboing around the country, you know, for the rest of his life. And, anyway, this is a song that's kind of loosely based on my brother, but it's certainly not his story. But I think you can take something that's true and have that be the inspiration for something and make something that hold some interest. I hope this song does. It's called "Bread and Water." One night he wandered in that old mission. One night. Just a place to lay his drunk old body down. He said, "Man, I sure am hungry. I don't have a penny to my name. Lord knows I hadn't worked a month." Thank you. Lawrence. Those last two songs are from that new record I was telling you about. I'm trying, I don't know if it, I may be overshooting my dreams or something. I'm just trying to maybe get everybody on Facebook to buy one. I'd have the best Christmas ever. Alright, we're going to turn the party up a little bit and have a little fun. This one's called The Next Big Thing.
I'm not afraid to die.
Davis on the piano there, y'all. Friend, and I've lived down here, Mr. Pete Wisner, also in the keyboards. We were working on a song one day, and we weren't having much luck. Nothing good was coming, and so I decided to turn on the TV, and lo and behold, there was some golf on. So I had the sound down, of course, if you don't mind watching it. And I noticed, I started kind of checking this out. I noticed that every commercial that was coming on this golf telecast was about a certain male dysfunction.
4 hours, baby.
And it started to, first it was like kind of weird, you know, because I got a family of a whole lot of girls, and you know, I'm just sitting there going, oh, I wish this went on TV. I can't even see all this, you know. One day, my littlest one, who's 6 or 7, she goes, "Daddy?" I go, "Yep, Al." She goes, "What's your erectile dysfunction?" I don't know. Yeah, I don't know yet. But anyway, I thought it was awful. Then it started to scare me a little bit because I play a lot of golf. Only attack golfers. So, anyway, we watched and watched, and finally I said to Pete, I think I got an idea. You do? Watching golf? I said, no, from the commercials. He said, what do you got? I said, well, we're going to write a song about a cowgirl. He said, I like that. I said, here's her name. Her first name is LaVitra. He shook his head. I said, her last name is going to be Marcantonio, just to confuse him. LaVitra Marcantonio. It don't get any weirder than that. Anyway, the song was finished and written about this cowgirl named LaVitra, and we finished it. He says, what do you think we have to call this? I said, only one thing we can't call it. We're going to call it Cowboy Up.
Oh,
Amy said, Amy said I couldn't do more than 3 Fest songs in a row. Didn't have such a good doctor's report last visit. Too much cheese. All right, let's do that. Billy Thomas, y'all. long time ago, allowed us both to get a house we can no longer afford to live in.
Thank you.
Here's to you guys. I'm blind since I saw you. Drag playing the guitar and wearing glasses. Because they're bifocals, and it's weird because down there at the bottom, they're for reading. And I look down and I can't see the neck of my guitar. So I'm kind of looking under them and I'm always a fret off. do you a song that was my first big hit record, I guess, for me. I didn't think I'd ever had one. I would ever have one. I made records for a long time, but I couldn't prove it because nobody had them. I didn't know how to do anything else. I'm allergic to hard work, so I hung in there. Anyway, this song came along, and this was so amazing to have a big hit record that was all across the country and all that stuff. More pickups started showing up at the honky-tonks, and that was fun. All good stuff. What was weird was I would occasionally get recognized, and I never really had that happen before. I had two women walking towards me in the mall one time, and they're smoking cigarettes and shuffling along and went to shopping, and I walked by, and one of them kind of turned and said, "That looked like Vince Gill." My mother just started laughing. She says, never even looked. She said, he wishes. Awful grateful for this. Thank you.
much, Country Legends.
Song is a song I wrote with my dear friend Rodney Crowell. Yeah. Old friends, you know, like I said, we met here 35 years ago and have been fast friends ever since. And anyway, we were working on a record together and we were out working on some songs. And then we started telling stories about how dysfunctional our families were. He told me about his cousin Charles, and I started telling him about my dad, the judge. And we just sat there and laughed and laughed and laughed at all that crazy stuff. My dad was an interesting fellow. He was a lawyer by trade, but a redneck by birth. I saw a whole lot more redneck in my old man than I ever did lawyer or judge. But my father was very gruff. You know, he was very strict and old school, very, very, very old school. He was gruff. He was like, if you could take Patton, John Wayne, and maybe Clint Eastwood, roll him into one dude to be my father. 6'3", weighed 300 pounds, and was a giant of a man. He always had a cigarette going. He'd come home from work, take off his suit and tie, and put on overalls with no shirt. He looked like a wrestler. Scare the hell out of me. Sit there with that cigarette. Don't make me come over there. I'll give you something to cry about. I'll knock you through that wall and I'll make you fix it. It was a trip, man. You know, no messing around. You screwed up and right away you got your ass kicked. You know, you did. No messing around. I would love to have seen my father's reaction if somebody would have told him that timeout would be a good thing for his children. Over big, he said, you want me to do what? Set him in a corner for 30 minutes. I think I'll just kick his ass. Such was my life. And I knew that I never wanted to get in any trouble either. I'd rather face a SWAT team. If I ever got arrested and they gave me one phone call, I said, keep it. I just brought in here. When I got to be a teenager, and he said, by the way, if you want any money, get your ass a job. Okay. Got me a job in this pizza joint, you know, a couple blocks from the house. We worked till midnight, you know, on school night. I'd get up early and still get to school. Wouldn't get in any trouble. And every now and then, it'd be about 20 minutes before closing time, you know, and the phone would ring there at the pizza joint, and I'd pick it up. I'd hear, hey, boy, is that you? I said, yeah, Dad, what's up? He goes, hey, do me a favor. Screw up a couple on purpose, will you? I said, don't skimp on the pepperonis. You'd make these giant big pepperoni pizzas as big as your head. You know, giant. Put more pepperonis than they were ever supposed to have on. You're supposed to count out how many you're going to put on there. It'd be closing time. It'd be time to lock the door, and there'd be these two hot giant pepperoni pizzas. And the manager would come in and go, what's this? What are these? I took an order to go from some guy, and he never came to get them. I don't know what, you know. He goes, well, do whatever you want to with them. I said, okay, maybe I can take them home. I still have these really disturbing images of my father and his tidy whities at the kitchen table. Sitting there in one hand, pizza in the other. Smiling from ear to ear. That's my boy. You didn't skimp on the pepperoni. It's all true. Didn't make that mess up. He went on to, you know, be my biggest champion for so many years. The years I was out here struggling to pay the rent, living out here, you all know how expensive it is. And I just was struggling. I go, where's the rent going to come from? And a casual would come in at some bar somewhere for 20, 30 bucks, and I'd make rent. And he was always going, hang in there, son, you're getting better. Your songs are getting better, you know. It was all pretty good. And as I started doing a little better, he became my biggest critic. First year I got to host the award shows, the CMA Awards, many years ago. I remember it was a great night. I won a couple of awards, never done that before. We stayed up and partied all night long, you know. Got to bed about 5:30. And my dad decided to call me about 7 before he went to work. I've been asleep for about an hour. And picked up the phone. Hello? He said, "Who in the hell do you think you are?" "I got news for you, pal. I watched you last night. You're no Jay Leno." All this, it took me a lot forever to figure out. He was just trying to keep me level, you know. When I needed some support, man, he was there. When I needed my ass kicked, he kicked it. Anyway, he came to me one day and he says, "I think I've got a good song for you, good idea." I said, "Oh, now you've gone from critic to songwriter." He said, "Yeah, I think you can be bigger than Elvis if you do this one." I said, "Yeah, if I play 2 more Indian casinos and have the buffet, I'm going to be bigger than Elvis." Anyway, told me the idea, and I said, "Oh, that's a good idea," you know. Blew it off, and never did anything. I promised him I'd write it. He passed away in 97, and still never done anything with it. And then years later, Rodney and I, we were cracking up, telling all of these same stories, and these dysfunctional fun stories. And I told him the idea that my father had. He goes, "Man, that's a great idea." He said, "That's better than anything we're working on." I said, "Let's finish it." I said, "Okay." So away we went, and bigger than Elvis, we didn't get. Fantastic. She says, "Where have you been?" I said, said, oh, I was at Rodney's house today. We were writing a song. She goes, oh, let me hear it. I really don't remember it too good. Just kind of messing around with an idea, you know. She goes, oh, come on, baby, sing it for me. I said, oh, really? But she goes, come on, please. Against my better judgment, I sang this song. My wife, Amy Grant. One of the more popular Christian singers. I got through singing that song. That smile was gone. She looked at me and she said, what's that about? I said, well, we just thought it was funny. Said, yeah, well, you keep thinking that. So in fact, you keep thinking that all night long, right over there on that big fluffy cactus. I said, oh, baby, I said, I didn't write that song about you. I said, we ain't been married long enough. Yes. I said, that's my dad's idea. Before he died, I promised him I'd write it someday, and I never did. And I felt bad. And today, Rodney and I were talking about old times. We finally wrote that song. Little by little, that smile came back. She let me back in the house. Everything was fine. Then I started thinking about it. I said, well, where did the idea for this song come from? That's when it dawned on me that the inspiration behind this fine, fine song was inspired by my dear mother. She hates this song. Well, I remember when her eyes were so blue and shiny. Man, you ought to see what's happened to her eyes. I'm telling you, man, that thing has gotten big enough to land a small plane on. Yeah, there was a time when I used to roll her in the clover. But thank God those days are over. Cause it's hard to kiss the lips that chew your ass out all day long. song that I wrote with my wife Amy and two other fellas. One of them, I'm proud to say, is with us in the house tonight, Mr. Dylan O'Brien, great songwriter. Another fellow that we wrote this song with was named Will Owsley. Will was a great artist, made a couple of records, and worked in my wife's band for a lot of years. Was a viciously talented guy, and unfortunately, his life was troubled in a big way. And right after I recorded this song with him, he took his own life. And anyway, this was the result. A beautiful song, Dylan. Proud to have written this with you. It's called "Threaten Me with Heaven."
Soon I will be.
folks that wanted to hear this special tonight. My old pal's Orbit. He's here tonight. He's been coming to see me all these 35 years since I've been here. Thanks for coming, Johnny. Got a friend out here lost her daddy that his name was Ron Johnson. He did a record cover for one of the first records I ever made out here. Playing with Byron, and she lost her dad 3 months back. Anybody that's hurting, I hope you love this song.
Thank you. Coke. Out of 20. When you smile, that smile.
Well, thank you so much for coming. It's been a real blast. I've thought long and hard about what song I wanted to sing last tonight, and it wasn't really that hard to figure out. This is, like I said, I came here 36 years ago, and just trying to do whatever I could do to play music. And one thing I wanted to do was sing like Emmy Lou, and I wanted to write a song like Rodney Crowell. The most amazing thing was that very first night I came to California to play, it was in here. And I sang this song, and it was one of Rodney's songs, and we never met, of course, and he came back to this little dressing room right up here. He said, "Who in the hell are you? What are you doing singing my song better than I can?" Those were his words, and he gave me a big hug, and he goes, "You and me are going to be friends forever."
Yeah.
I gotta sing this one to say goodnight. Just like the sun over the mountain top, you know I. You see me better.